I want you to just imagine for a second that you're looking at a job offer.
Okay.
And it's one of those gigs that just seems like way too good to be true.
Oh, yeah. We all know those.
Right. The pay is amazing. The work itself is super straightforward. And maybe it even involves a little bit of travel.
Sounds perfect so far.
Exactly. So you're sitting there looking at the numbers on the screen, you're calculating your profit, and it just feels like a total slam dunk.
Right.
But what if I told you there was a catch, like a massive catch that you literally cannot see anywhere in the contract?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. A catch where the moment you actually finish the job, you find yourself stranded in the middle of a literal desert.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right? There is no work for hundreds of miles. Nobody is willing to pay you to leave.
Yeah.
And the only way out is to basically burn through all that profit you just made on the trip out there just to get back to civilization.
I mean, that completely flips the math on the whole thing.
Right.
Because that initial payout, it just becomes a mirage. You know, it's distracting you from this massive hidden cost of actually extracting yourself from the situation.
Exactly. And the crazy thing is, this isn't some like hypothetical thought experiment for a college economics class.
No, not at
So this
all.
is the daily grinding reality of American freight.
Yeah, it's brutal out there.
It really is. It's this multi-billion dollar world where the biggest financial risk a business owner takes isn't the actual journey.
Right.
It's not even the cargo they're hauling. It's what happens to their truck after they drop that cargo off.
And that is exactly why we are doing this deep dive today.
Yes, because today we are cracking open this incredibly fascinating internal briefing document.
It's so good.
It is. It's called the Outbound Viability Map, Amazon Relay Edition, version 1.0.
Dated July 25, 2026.
Right. And it was prepared by this research group called Resurca Labs.
Yeah, and we should probably clarify right up front, this is not published by Amazon.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Right. It's a highly specialized third-party tool that's built for carriers, for dispatchers, and, you know, the people advising them.
It's basically a decoder ring.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. A decoder ring for the hidden physics of the logistics world.
Because it's trying to solve this really old problem, but it's using some very new math to do it.
Exactly. I mean, the mission of this document, it's trying to take that ephemeral, almost like mystical road sense that veteran truck drivers have.
Right, that gut feeling.
Yeah, the stuff they develop over decades of driving. And the document tries to translate that into cold, marred, clickable data.
Which is wild.
It is. We are looking at how physical geography, population density, and these incredibly strict delivery deadlines, how they all kind of conspire together.
Right.
And they create this invisible topographical map of the United States.
An invisible map. I love that.
Yeah. And on this map, freight naturally flows downhill towards certain cities, and then it gets hopelessly expensively trapped in others.
Okay, let's unpack this because the whole premise just blows my mind. The idea that sheer human intuition, like that gut feeling a driver gets when they see a load heading to, I don't know, Western
Oh,
Kansas.
yeah, Western Kansas.
Right. The idea that that instinct can be converted into a mathematical algorithm is just wild to me.
It is quantifying an instinct, for sure.
Yeah.
And the stakes here, I mean, they go far beyond just trucks and highways.
Definitely.
If you zoom out, this document is a window into the invisible supply chains that keep your entire life running.
Every single day.
Right. Every single item in your home, you know, the food in your fridge, even the physical server architecture that is streaming this audio to you right now.
It all moves through this system.
Exactly. It all moves through this system. And the system is entirely governed by these unseen forces: gravity, mass, time. And that is what Resurca Labs is trying to map out here.
So, to really understand why someone would go through all the trouble of building this incredibly complex map, we kind of have to look at the pain point it's trying to solve.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the briefing opens by outlining this eternal daily argument. And it happens in dispatch offices all across the country.
Every single morning.
Right. You have the dispatcher on one side and you have the driver on the other.
Yeah.
And a typical load offer, I mean, it really only shows two basic pieces of information.
Right, where the truck is going and what the broker is willing to pay.
Exactly. But to a driver, taking a really high-paying load into what they consider a dead market that isn't actually revenue.
No, it's really not.
The briefing uses this phenomenal phrase. It calls it a loan against deadhead miles.
Oh, that phrase. It perfectly encapsulates the brutal economic reality of the spot market.
It really does. Can you explain deadhead miles for a second?
Yeah, so deadhead miles refer to the distance a trucker has to drive with an empty trailer, just to pick up their next load.
So they're not carrying anything.
Right. And you aren't getting paid for deadhead miles.
Yeah.
You're just burning diesel and you're burning time.
Which is money.
Exactly. So if you take a load into a dead market, you are essentially taking out a loan.
Wow.
It is the cost to drive that empty truck back to a place where you can actually find freight. And you end up repaying that loan on your next job at a massive discount to your overall margin.
That makes so much sense when you frame it that way. And the argument between the dispatcher and the driver, it seems so intractable because they are basically operating on completely different planes of reality.
Oh, entirely.
The driver possesses this deep instinctual knowledge. The document says it lives in the seat.
I love that line. Lives in the seat.
Right. It's accumulated over years of feeling the actual pain of sitting in Western Kansas with an empty trailer for 3 days.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, driving 400 miles unpaid just to find a new load.
Meanwhile, the dispatcher is just sitting in an office. They're looking at a screen.
Right.
And they just see this glowing green number. It represents an immediate, highly attractive profit margin on that specific leg of the journey.
Because they're only looking at the trip out there.
Exactly. And this asymmetry of information, that is the root of the whole conflict.
Yeah.
The dispatcher cannot be argued into caution because neither side actually has hard empirical evidence to present to the other.
Right. The dispatcher points to the high rate and the driver just points to their gut feeling that it's a trap.
They are both arguing from memory or from, like, isolated anecdotes rather than from a concrete, verifiable record of how the market actually behaves.
It kind of reminds me of, okay, say you're browsing online, right?
Okay.
And you find a ridiculously cheap plane ticket to some beautiful remote island.
Oh, I'm booking it.
Right. You're looking at the price. You're thinking you just scored the deal of a lifetime and you are ready to book.
Right.
But you haven't checked the return flights yet.
Ah.
And once you get to the island, you realize the only airline that flies back to the mainland charges 10 times the normal rate. Or, you know, maybe they only fly once a week.
You're trapped.
Exactly. So in this freight scenario, the travel agent, who is basically the dispatcher, is fighting with the traveler, the driver, and they're fighting about whether the island is actually a trap. And neither of them has a schedule of the return flights to prove their point.
That captures the dynamic perfectly.
It's wild.
The dispatcher is blinded by the cheap ticket in, and the driver is terrified of the astronomical cost of the journey home.
Right.
And as long as human memory and individual anecdotal experience are the only tools they have, this bottleneck will never be resolved.
It's just a constant battle.
It is. It just leads to endless friction, blown schedules, and honestly, lost margins for the trucking company.
So if human memory is the bottleneck here, you have to build an objective referee.
Right.
You need something that doesn't have an opinion, that doesn't get emotional about the rate.
Exactly.
And that is exactly what Recirca Labs built. They created this referee using the raw physics of freight.
Yeah, they really did.
So let's break down how they actually built this instrument, because the mechanics are fascinating.
They're so cool.
The outbound viability map evaluates 917 distinct United States markets.
Right.
And these aren't just like arbitrary zones. They are defined by the census, metropolitan, and micropolitan statistical areas.
And the technical implementation of it is remarkably elegant.
How so?
Well, they packaged this entire valuation system into a single file that just opens locally in a web browser.
Wait, just a single file?
Yeah. It requires no network connection and no user account.
Oh, wow.
It is totally self-contained, meaning the carrier's proprietary data isn't being pinged back to some central server somewhere.
Which is huge for privacy in an industry that is this highly competitive.
Oh, absolutely massive.
So at the center of this map, the core metric they use to judge a city is something called the K-score.
The K-score.
Right. The document says it ranges from 0.55 to 1.45, and 1.0 represents the median market.
So the term K-score is actually borrowed directly from reactor physics.
Wait, like nuclear reactors?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I did not expect nuclear physics in a logistics deep dive.
I know, right? But it fits perfectly. So in a nuclear reactor, the letter K represents the effective neutron multiplication factor.
Okay.
If K is greater than 1, the nuclear chain reaction is self-sustaining. It's growing.
Got it.
But if K is less than 1, the reaction inevitably dies out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Recirca applies this exact same behavioral concept to freight markets.
So in this metaphor, the truck dropping off its cargo is the neutron.
Yes, exactly. A market is a node in the network. So when a truck empties its trailer there, the market either regenerates a viable next load.
which means the supply chain reaction sustains itself.
Right, and it earns a score above 1.0. Or the market absorbs the truck.
The truck just gets stuck.
Yep, the truck gets stuck, the economic reaction stalls, and the chain dies, resulting in a score below 1.0.
I love how visceral that is. You're either fueling the reaction or you are killing it.
Right, it's life or death for the supply chain.
So how do they mathematically calculate whether a city is going to sustain the truck or absorb it?
They use a really specific formula.
Yeah, the briefing outlines five specific ingredients that make up this case score, and they compute all of this from open public data.
Right.
The first ingredient is called own density.
Yeah, so own density uses the 2024 census data for a resident population per square mile.
Okay, so just basic population density.
Exactly, because in logistics, population density is basically the ultimate baseline proxy for consumption.
Right, because people need stuff.
Exactly. The more people you have packed into a specific geographic area, the more goods they consume simply by existing.
Yeah.
They need groceries, they buy clothes, they order electronics online. That baseline human need guarantees a certain volume of inbound and outbound freight movement.
Okay, but knowing how many people live in one specific city isn't enough, right? Because cities don't exist in a vacuum.
Right, they don't.
So that brings us to the second ingredient, which is neighborhood gravity.
Neighborhood gravity.
Right. And the formula here is the sum of the neighboring market populations divided by the distance to each of those neighbors.
Right. And they cap the radius at 500 miles.
Right. But there is a really specific caveat in the document here. They put a 60-mile floor on the distance.
Yes. The 60-mile floor.
I was trying to wrap my head around the math there. Why enforce a 60-mile minimum? Like, what does that actually do?
It's actually a really smart protection against mathematical distortion.
Okay.
Imagine you have a tiny micropolitan suburb, right? And it's located just, say, 10 miles outside of a massive economic engine like New York City or Chicago.
Okay, yeah.
If you divide the population of New York by that tiny 10-mile distance, the resulting gravity score for that little suburb would be astronomically high.
Ooh.
Yeah, purely because the denominator in your equation is so close to zero.
I see. It would make a random tiny suburb look like the most viable freight hub on Earth just because it's physically close to millions of people, even if it has literally no warehouses of its own.
Exactly. The 60-mile floor smooths out the math. It prevents one neighboring giant from completely breaking the viability score of a smaller adjacent market.
That makes total sense.
It forces the algorithm to acknowledge that, yes, outbound viability depends heavily on the gravitational pull of what surrounds a market.
Yeah.
But you can't let a proximity of just a few miles create a false positive.
That level of detail is just brilliant.
It really is.
So the third ingredient moves from theory to actual receipts.
Right.
It's called observed freight volume.
Yeah, this one is crucial.
They use county-to-county truck tonnage from the Federal Freight Analysis Framework, or the FAF.
The FAF, yeah.
And they convert this massive federal tonnage data into actual load counts. The math they use is 22.5 tons per load, which they say is the practical payload limit for a standard 45,000-pound cap in a dry van.
Right.
Now, for someone not in the industry, a dry van is just your standard enclosed box trailer, right? Like, nothing refrigerated, no flatbeds.
Exactly. Just a standard 53-foot enclosed trailer.
Got it.
And the key here is that they aren't just guessing based on population anymore. They are pulling the federal government's actual receipts of what physically moved on the highways.
The real data.
Yeah. The FAF data tracks the physical weight of goods transported between specific zones. By converting that weight into standard dry van limits, they get a very realistic estimate of how many actual trucks were required to move that mass.
Which is way more accurate than just guessing.
Way more.
So then ingredient four is network proximity.
Right.
Now, this one is much more specific to the Amazon Relay edition of the map. They basically map out the locations of Amazon facilities within roughly 150 estimated road miles of the market.
Because that maps the specific ecosystem this version of the tool is designed for, right?
Right.
Amazon's internal freight network has its own gravity, totally independent of the general freight market.
Right. They have their own physics, basically.
Exactly.
And then we get to the fifth ingredient, which they call the sink penalty.
Oh, the sink penalty. This is where it gets really interesting.
It is. Because this actively docks the case score of markets that take in far more freight than they ship out.
Yep.
Now, let me play devil's advocate here for a second, because this kind of seems to contradict the very first ingredient.
How so?
Well, if ingredient number one says that population equals consumption and consumption equals freight, Why penalize a massive city? Doesn't a giant population center automatically generate loads for a truck to haul away?
See, you have just articulated the exact logical trap that dispatchers fall into every single day.
Really?
Yes. Pure population is an incredibly dangerous metric if you just look at it in isolation.
Okay, why?
Because a city might consume massively. I mean, you could have millions of people eating, drinking, building houses, buying TVs, whatever.
Right.
But that exact same city might produce absolutely nothing that a standard dry van can actually haul away.
So all the trucks go in full and they all have to leave empty.
Think about a city that is heavily dependent on tourism, for example, or just a sprawling, purely residential region.
Right, like a giant suburb.
Yeah. Trucks full of consumer packaged goods, they just flow in relentlessly. But there are no manufacturing plants there. Mm. There are no major distribution centers repackaging goods for other states. So that city is a sink. The penalty in the algorithm is one directional. If a market is heavily inbound, its score plummets.
But wait, what if a market is heavily outbound? Like, say, an agricultural hub in the Midwest that ships out millions of tons of grain, but it doesn't consume much. Does the score go up?
No. The score doesn't necessarily rise for an outbound heavy agricultural hub.
Really? Why not?
Because agricultural bulk doesn't move in a dry van.
Oh.
Right. It moves in specialized equipment, like hopper bottoms or liquid tankers. And a standard dry van driver can't touch that freight.
So it's irrelevant to them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the map deliberately penalizes the traps without falsely inflating the agricultural hubs.
That is so incredibly dialed in.
It really is.
Okay, so a baseline score of 1.0 means you've found an average balanced market that will sustain a truck.
Yep.
But the briefing stresses that 1.0 is a relative number. It only means something compared to the specific group of markets you are analyzing.
Right, context is everything here.
The map doesn't just offer one universal view of the country. It actually offers three distinct lenses or views.
Yeah, so the first lens is called All U.S. Markets, which plots all 917 census areas.
Okay.
This is the baseline reality. It's the macro view of loads that anyone with a standard truck can theoretically bid on.
Got it.
Then the second lens is Amazon markets only. That narrows the field down to just 115 markets where Amazon actually has facilities.
And then the third view, which they call My Network, includes 163 markets. It's the Amazon markets, plus federal rail intermodal ramps within about 25 road miles.
Right.
And when you toggle between these views, the entire topographical map of the United States physically changes.
It's wild to see.
Like, a city that looks like a great market on the all-U.S. view might suddenly plunge below a 1.0 score on the My Network view.
Yes.
Which introduces this really cool concept of credentials.
Credentials, right.
Why does the presence of a rail ramp completely alter the math of a city?
Because a rail ramp isn't just a point of geography. It functions as an exclusive club with a bouncer at the door.
Oh, I like that analogy.
In the logistics world, we call this a credentialed edge. To access the thousands of loads coming off trains at an intermodal ramp, a trucking carrier needs an interchange agreement, specifically the UIA and various safety authorizations.
And most small carriers don't have that paperwork, do they?
The vast majority of standard dry van operators simply do not hold those credentials. If they drive up to the gate of a rail yard, they will literally be turned away.
It's kind of like, okay, imagine you download an app on your phone that shows you all the available parking spots in a crowded downtown city like Chicago.
Oh, man, nightmare.
Right. You open the app and it's a nightmare. The whole map is red. Everything is full. There's 1,000 people fighting for 2 open spots.
Sounds about right.
But then you go into the settings and you enter your special VIP resident permit number.
Oh, okay.
And the map recalibrates. It hides all the public spots you were fighting over, and it only highlights the spots reserved exclusively for permit holders. Suddenly, a city that looked fully booked to everyone else is wide open for you, and the competition has just vanished.
That is exactly it. And the economic implication of that VIP switch is massive.
I can imagine.
When you apply your credentials to the map, the pool of eligible trucks competing for that freight shrinks dramatically.
Right.
You're no longer competing against every single truck in a 50-mile radius. You are only competing against the handful of trucks whose companies have the legal authority to clear the rail yard gate.
It's just basic supply and demand.
Exactly, supply and demand.
Yeah.
When the eligible supply of trucks drops because of a credential barrier, the price you can command to haul that freight skyrockets.
Because they need you.
Yes. The map recalibrates its 1.0 median based only on the specific credentialed network you are actually allowed to play in. It reveals exactly where you have an unfair advantage.
Okay, so with the rules of this game established and our VIP passes in hand, it is time to actually look at the physical game board.
Let's do it.
How does this mathematical algorithm reshape our understanding of the American map? Because the briefing breaks the country down into these five vivid topographical regions of hustle.
They paint a portrait of the country that, as the authors note, any veteran driver would recognize in their bones, even if they've never seen the data.
Right.
First, you have the Eastern Fortress. This represents the densest distribution capacity in the entire nation.
The Eastern Fortress.
It runs heavily along the corridors of Interstate 78 and 81. Philadelphia registers a massive K-score of 1.45.
Wow.
Allentown, Baltimore, Trenton, they all show incredibly strong numbers.
I mean, it feeds the largest consumption market in the hemisphere, right? The Eastern Seaboard.
Precisely. If you pull an empty trailer into the Eastern Fortress, you are standing safely inside the strongest part of the network. You will almost certainly find a profitable loadout.
So that's the fortress. Then you move slightly west, and there is a region they call the Crescent.
The Crescent, yeah.
This is a massive arc anchored by Chicago, which sits at a 1.32 score. And the data on Chicago is just staggering. It has 42 Amazon facilities and 20 rail ramps within its reachable radius.
It's a behemoth.
Right. And the Crescent stretches up through Milwaukee, down through Indianapolis, over to Columbus, and up to Detroit.
Yeah.
The briefing points out this is the only region in the country where the Amazon warehouse lattice and the federal rail lattice perfectly overlap.
Which means it is the absolute center of gravity for credentialed freight.
Oh, because of the rail ramp.
Exactly. If you have those interchange agreements we talked about, the Crescent is an absolute goldmine because the density of high barrier freight is unmatched anywhere else in the country.
But as we keep moving west, the map starts to fracture.
Yeah, it gets rough.
We hit what Ricerca calls the seam. This follows the rim of Interstate 35. You're looking at markets like Des Moines, Iowa, sitting at 0.85, or Kansas City at 0.94.
Right.
These are real markets. They have real facilities, and real people live there. But their geography is completely lopsided.
It really is. The data point the briefing highlights for Des Moines is perfectly illustrative.
Yeah.
Des Moines holds 39% of its reachable mass in its eastern sector, facing Chicago.
Okay.
But it only has 3% of its reachable mass to the northwest.
Wow, 39% versus 3%.
Exactly.
This introduces a feature on the map called the pull arrows.
Ah, yes, the pull vectors.
The software calculates an 8-sector compass vector for every city based on where the population is located over a certain distance. And on the seam, all the arrows strictly point back east.
Because freight behaves very much like water. It flows toward mass.
That makes total sense.
If you are sitting on the edge of the Great Plains in Iowa, there is simply not enough population density to your west to generate reliable, high-paying outbound freight on a consistent basis.
Right. There's just no gravity there.
The immense gravity of Chicago and the Eastern Fortress is literally pulling the freight back east. The map renders this reality mathematically with those vectors.
And if you ignore the arrows and you keep driving west past the seam, you fall straight into what they call the chasm.
The chasm. It sounds ominous.
It is. This is the western third of the United States where supply chains go to die.
Yeah, scores just plummet.
The K-scores just completely collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Fargo is at 0.59, Boise is at 0.60, El Paso is at 0.58.
Brutal.
So if I'm a carrier and I'm looking at the chasm with these terrible subjoint six scores, what do I actually do with that information? Like, does this map basically exist to tell me to just boycott half the United States?
It's a really common initial reaction, but it's a dangerous misinterpretation of the tool.
Okay, why?
The map isn't issuing a blanket command to never go here.
Mm-hmm.
It is telling you that if you do go there, you must price the exit.
Price the exit.
Exactly. Let's say a broker desperately needs you to take a load into Fargo, North Dakota. You look at the map, and the math proves that you will likely have to deadhead, drive empty for hundreds of miles just to get back to a viable market. Therefore, you cannot accept a standard rate for that inbound load. You have to build the cost of your eventual escape into the incoming rate.
So you're basically charging them up front for the empty miles you know you are inevitably going to drive next Tuesday.
Precisely. You are forcing the market to pay for the geography it is asking you to traverse.
Which brings up the fifth and final region, which they call the islands.
Right, the islands.
These are cities like Denver and Salt Lake City. The map shows that they are highly functional markets once you are actually inside them.
Like, yep.
They have decent local scores,
yep,
but they are completely surrounded by the chasm.
Right. So an island load is fundamentally a chasm crossing. To get to Denver, you have to cross the emptiness.
So the crossing itself belongs in the initial rate negotiation.
Exactly.
Now, the chasm is visibly empty space. Like, if you just look at a normal map of the U.S., you can see there aren't a lot of people in Montana or Wyoming.
Right. It's pretty obvious.
But the briefing warns that the real danger isn't the empty space. It's the mirage.
The mirage.
It's the places that look incredibly vibrant, that look full of life and money, but are actually invisible traps.
And this is where the instrument serves as a critical warning system for dispatchers. The map identifies, sinks those markets that absorb trucks and kill the chain, and it uses a two-tiered warning system, black holes and mirages.
The most severe warning is the red ring, which the map basically treats as a definitive verdict.
The red ring of death.
For a market to get slapped with a red ring, it requires two completely independent federal data sets to agree.
It has to be verified.
Right. It needs the local county level flow data and the national zone balance data to both verify that a market takes in at least 1.4 times more freight than it ever ships out.
Right.
And the prime example the briefing gives for a red ring is Las Vegas.
Oh, Vegas. Vegas is arguably the ultimate consumption sink in the American freight network.
I mean, it makes sense when you think about it.
Just think about the physical reality of the city. You have massive casinos, luxury hotels, thousands of restaurants, a booming residential population, colossal amounts of consumer goods, food, and building materials flow in every single day to support that environment.
But practically nothing manufactured is flowing out in a standard dry van.
Exactly. They don't export casino chips by the ton, you know.
Right.
So the map places a red ring around Vegas and mathematically calculates its pull arrow to point at exactly 226 degrees.
226 degrees, which, if you look at a compass, points directly southwest toward Los Angeles.
Yes. Los Angeles is the only practical escape hatch with enough mass to absorb the empty trucks leaving Vegas.
Wow.
And what's incredible is that the algorithm wasn't pre-programmed with local human knowledge about L.A. being the exit for Vegas.
It figured it out on its own.
The raw mathematical flow of the federal tonnage data reconstructed that geographic reality completely independently.
That's amazing.
As the authors write, every veteran driver in America already knew Vegas was a trap. The instrument just proved it exists in the federal data. So a dispatcher sitting in an office 2,000 miles away can finally see it on a screen.
So Vegas is a literal freight black hole. You go in and you cannot escape without getting sucked toward the gravity of Los Angeles. But then there is the second tier of warning on the map, the amber ring, which acts as a caution.
Right.
This triggers when the national data warns of a massive imbalance scoring below 0.65, but the localized county data disagrees and actually looks healthier.
Yeah, this is the mirage warning.
And the cities they flag with amber rings are fascinating. Miami, Orlando, Nashville.
Yeah, so the amber ring essentially means, hey, verify your outbound rates before committing.
Okay.
Miami consumes a massive amount of goods, but the data is muddy. Perhaps it has a seasonal agricultural output that distorts the county data, or highly localized distribution networks that make the micro-level data look better than the macro-level reality.
Let me stop you right there for a second.
Yep.
Because if I'm building a warning system for trucks and the national data says Miami is terrible, why not just give them all red rings to be safe? Like, why require two independent data sets to issue a red ring? Why not just err on the side of caution?
That is a great question. And that decision actually reveals a really deep understanding of user fatigue and software design.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the creators are demonstrating deliberate, calculated conservatism here.
Okay, explain that.
If you design a tool that cries wolf, or in this case, cries trampin, at every single major consumption city in the Sun Belt, the dispatchers using the tool will eventually just roll their eyes and ignore it entirely.
Oh, I see. They just tune it out.
Right. If every major city in Florida is flagged as a mortal danger, the map loses its authority because dispatchers know trucks do occasionally get good loads out of Florida.
Yeah, it's not impossible.
Right. So by reserving the red ring only for mathematically undeniable, structurally broken sinks like Vegas, they preserve the trust of the user.
That makes a lot of sense.
When the map flashes red, the dispatcher knows it isn't a glitch. It's a structural guarantee of a deadhead loan.
That is such a smart way to design a tool for people who are honestly, naturally skeptical of software.
Exactly. You have to earn their trust.
Okay, so we've mapped the fortresses, the chasms, and the black holes. Now let's take all this theoretical physics and apply it to a real-world scenario.
Perfect.
The briefing actually provides an anatomy of a premium rate. Let's look at a specific truck on a specific day to see how all these invisible sources of scarcity basically multiply profit.
Yeah, this specific breakdown is vital because it bridges the gap between the macro level federal data and a micro level business decision made at like 8 a.m. on a Tuesday.
Right.
The example they provide is from the morning of July 25, 2026. A truck is sitting on the Des Moines Rim.
Right on that lopsided seam we talked about.
Exactly. Right where all the arrows point east. And an offer comes across the board. Move a load from Bondurant, Iowa to a Chicago rail ramp.
Okay.
The rate offered is $1,543.33 for a 331-mile trip.
Let me just do the math on that really quickly. That comes out to $4.66 per mile. And the document notes that $4.66 is nearly double the typical spot rate for a dry van on that lane.
A massive premium.
So they run this offer through their round checker tool to evaluate it. And the tool shows that the destination, Chicago, is an easy out. It's sitting right in the center of the crescent with a huge K-score.
Yep.
The physical distance is under 500 miles, which means a single driver can legally complete it in one day without violating hours of service regulations.
Crucial point.
And the direction rides the pole vector perfectly due east into the gravity of the Eastern Fortress.
Right. So from a pure physics perspective, the market is offering this truck double the standard money to do the exact thing the map says the truck naturally wants to do anyway.
Right.
Which is escape the precarious edge of the seam and move into the dense, safe mass of the Eastern network.
Okay, I have to pause here. If the market is offering double the money to do something the map says the truck should naturally want to do anyway, isn't the market acting completely irrationally?
It seems like it, right?
Yeah. It feels like the broker or the shipper is just throwing money away. Why would they pay a premium for a highly desirable route?
It looks completely irrational until you unpack the three distinct layers of scarcity that create this premium. And interestingly, only one of those layers is actually geography.
Wow. Okay.
The first reason for the premium is position. This truck was available on a geographically thin rim, but crucially, it was available inside a very tight 2-hour window when the load absolutely needed to move.
Oh, so timing is huge.
Exactly. The second reason is credentials. As we discussed with the VIP pass analogy earlier, this load was going into a rail ramp.
Right.
It required a rail legal carrier with interchange authority to enter the Chicago yard. That single requirement instantly disqualified the vast majority of competing dry vans sitting in the Des Moines area.
The bouncer at the door kept the competition out.
Exactly. And the third reason is the clock. The document emphasizes that the load had to in-gate at the Chicago rail ramp before the evening cutoff.
In-gate? What does that mean exactly?
So an in-gate means getting the physical container through the gates of the rail yard before a specific time. Intermodal cutoffs are a hard wall. The train is leaving.
Oh, I see.
If you miss the gate, the container misses the train.
Yeah.
And the cascading effect of that is massive. You break a downstream promise to a retailer, a factory line might stall, or a ship might literally leave port without the cargo.
Okay, so the premium isn't irrational at all.
Not in the slightest. It is the cost of strict temporal and credential scarcity.
That's fascinating.
As the briefing perfectly summarizes, geography tells you where to stand, credentials let you play the game, the clock dictates the massive payday.
Wow.
The outbound viability map only addresses the geography part. The carrier's own specific business profile, their speed, their paperwork, their reliability, dictates the rest.
Seeing all these invisible forces line up to explain a single rate is just incredible.
It's a great example.
The elegance of the tool is undeniable. But I want to pivot here because one of the most surprising things about this briefing is how brutally honest Recerca Labs is about the map's limitations.
Oh, they are very upfront about it.
Like, what are the blind spots? What is this hyper-advanced algorithm completely blind to?
Section 10 of the document explicitly lays out the permanent limitations. And they stress that these are permanent properties of the design, not like bugs they plan to fix with the software patch next month.
Right. It's built this way.
Exactly. The first major limitation is that tonnage is not loads. We actually touched on this with the agricultural hubs earlier. Physical weight moves in equipment that dry vans just can't use.
Right. The hoppers and tankers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Massive amounts of grain or liquid chemicals can falsely flatter a region's viability if you are driving a dry van.
Okay, that makes sense. Second, there is no seasonality.
None.
Harvest surges in the fall or massive retail peaks before the holidays, they are totally invisible because the FAF data is an annual aggregate. If a market gets incredibly hot for 3 weeks in October, the map just won't reflect that spike at all.
The map is also equipment blind.
Yeah.
Reefer drivers, the refrigerated trucks, and flatbed drivers simply don't experience the same country that a dry van driver does.
Because they're moving completely different stuff.
Exactly. Their maps would look completely different because their freight is different.
Mm.
Also, the distances the tool uses are estimates based on a standard 1.2 circuity factor.
A circuity factor? You mean like the difference between how a crow flies versus actually winding around a mountain on a highway?
Precisely. If you draw a straight line from Denver to Vegas, it's one distance. But trucks don't fly over the Rockies in a straight line.
Right. They have to navigate the actual terrain.
Yeah. So the 1.2 factor attempts to account for the winding roads by basically adding 20% to the straight line distance.
Hmm.
But it's an imperfect average. It doesn't perfectly model every single river crossing or mountain pass.
That's fair.
Finally, the Amazon community mapping relies on OpenStreetMap, which honestly tends to undercount facilities in rural areas.
Okay, but looking at all these limitations, there is one glaring omission that jumps out as absolutely massive to me.
What's that?
There is no rate data.
Yes.
They built this highly sophisticated tool to help truck drivers figure out if a market is profitable, but they intentionally left out the actual dollar amounts.
They did.
That sounds like building a weather app that refuses to tell you the temperature. It just tells you if there are clouds. Like, why would they exclude the money?
It seems entirely counterintuitive, I know. But it actually reveals the strict, almost academic philosophy of Recirca Labs.
Okay.
They operate on a really rigid principle of pristine receipt-grade data. If a data point is in a public, time-stamped, independently verifiable data set, it does not go into the map.
Period.
Period. Anecdotes from drivers, trade press rumors about what a lane is paying, or, you know, fluctuating spot rates pulled from load boards, they just don't meet that standard.
But drivers know that bad rates exist.
Yeah.
Like, a market might have a high K-score with lots of freight moving, but because there are too many trucks there, the rates just drop to garbage.
Yeah, that happens all the time.
So the map might tell you it's a great market, but you'll literally go broke taking a load there.
That is a very real possibility. But from an engineering standpoint, bad data is worse than no data.
Oh, interesting.
If you start feeding unverified, highly volatile rate anecdotes into the core algorithm, you contaminate the entire physical reality they've modeled. The rates change by the hour based on human emotion, weather, desperate brokers.
It's too noisy.
Way too noisy. They decided to map the unarguable physics of freight, the warehouse doors, the physical mass of the population, the recorded volume of goods, and explicitly leave the chaotic financial negotiations completely out of it.
I think I get it. It's like they map the ocean currents.
Yes, exactly.
The currents are real, they are measurable, and they determine how fast a ship can move.
But
how much someone is willing to pay you to sail your ship on that current changes every single day.
That is a perfect analogy.
So the money isn't part of the physical map.
Right. And there's actually another really fascinating example of this strict philosophy in the document.
Oh.
Yeah. The briefing mentions a group called MWPVL International, which apparently maintains the canonical public census of Amazon facilities.
Oh.
It's widely considered the most accurate list available in the entire industry. But Recirca explicitly refuses to use it.
Wait, if it's the most accurate list, why won't they use it?
Because MWPVL's machine-readable list is a paid proprietary product.
Mm.
Recirca Labs wants their map to be entirely reproducible by anyone using open public data. Citing a paid list violates their standard of open evidence.
Wow, so they really stick to their principles.
They really do. So they rely on community data, openly accepting that it might have slight inaccuracies in rural areas, rather than rely on a proprietary black box that a user can't verify themselves.
It's a remarkable level of discipline, honestly. You have to respect them sticking to their guns like that.
Oh, for sure.
But as you pointed out to me when we were reading this, Recirca Labs does have a plan for those missing rates, right?
They do.
Which brings us to the final and probably most powerful evolution of the tool.
Yes. Section 12 details what they call the ultimate vision.
The ultimate vision.
The public map we've been discussing, the one running in the browser, that's just an aid.
Yeah.
But the ultimate goal is for this map to become an operating system for load selection by integrating it with a carrier's own local Resurca appliance.
This is where it goes from being a cool theoretical map to an absolute weapon for a trucking company.
Oh, completely.
Explain how the appliance works.
So the tool is designed to perfectly merge the macro with the micro. The public map provides the macro the undeniable physics of the whole country.
Right.
But the local appliance, which is installed on a computer right in a dispatch office, it pulls the carrier's own private receipt grade data.
Oh, wow.
It pulls their dispatch records, their specific financial settlement histories, their actual fuel ledgers, and the proven list of rail yards their drivers have successfully entered in the past.
And it does all of this strictly on the user's local machine, right? Because the briefing explicitly says nothing leaves the yard.
Exactly. Security and leverage are paramount here. It takes the unhackable public truth of the federal geography and it overlays it perfectly with your own private, highly sensitive financial reality.
That is just brilliant.
The appliance calculates a historical rate norm based only on that specific carrier's past performance on a given lane. It scores the destination viability, the directional pull, the temporal clock, and the rate against your own history.
Wow.
Well, but it presents all four of those axes before you accept a new load.
From a business strategy standpoint, that is incredible. You get all the public federal intel about the terrain, but you don't surrender your own proprietary rate data to some cloud server where an algorithm could aggregate it and basically sell it to your competitors.
Exactly. You get a custom, unhackable truth that is totally unique to your fleet.
It fundamentally changes the dynamic of that dispatcher-driver argument we started the deep dive with, doesn't it?
Oh, it ends the argument entirely. When you bring your messy, unstructured export of dispatch data to this appliance, you leave with a map of your own bespoke network. You can instantly see the lanes that are priced beneath your own historical norm. You can finally see the detention time you incurred at specific warehouses, but never actually billed for.
It brings it all to the surface.
You can visualize the empty miles that are draining your week unnoticed. The argument ends because the reasoning is finally inspectable by both the driver and the dispatcher.
They are both looking at the exact same record.
Precisely.
So to summarize our journey today, we started in a cramped dispatch office, listening to a bitter, evidence-free argument between a driver's gut intuition and a dispatcher's profit screen.
Yeah, we've come a long way.
We really have. And we followed that problem all the way to a physics-inspired mapping of American logistics. We've seen how mass, credentials, and time completely dictate the flow of goods across the country, creating fortresses of profit in the East and absolute black holes of deadhead miles in places like Vegas.
And this matters deeply, honestly, even if you'd ever sit in the cab of a semi-truck or set foot in a warehouse.
Absolutely.
Whether you work in logistics, software engineering, retail, or corporate management, you operate within systems that are governed by invisible constraints. You operate in markets with unpriced exits and hidden credential barriers that define your ultimate value.
Which leaves us with a really provocative final thought for you to ponder based on this text.
Yeah, this is the good one.
The briefing mentions that an argument between an owner and a dispatcher is not really an argument about markets. It is an argument about evidence.
Right.
I want you to look at your own professional life. Think about your career or your business. How many recurring stressful arguments are you having right now simply because both sides are reasoning from memory rather than a shared, verifiable record?
It's a very powerful question to ask yourself.
It really is. If you were to build your own outbound viability map for your career choices or your business decisions, what would your case score actually look like?
What's your real viability?
When you take a new job or launch a new project, are you only looking at the initial payout? What invisible deadhead miles? The hidden costs of escaping a bad decision or pivoting from a dying project are you currently ignoring because you haven't priced the exit?
That's the real danger.
Remember our opening thought, don't let a lucrative offer blind you to the fact that you might just be buying a one-way ticket to a desert.
It's all about seeing the whole map.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We hope this has been your shortcut to being a little more well-informed about the hidden engine of the world. We'll catch you next time.